And we return. It is today's topical currents. Finally, it's Food and Dining Thursday. Part of our spring pledge drive, Bonnie. It's very important for our listeners to support the regional and local programmings that so many people work so hard to produce. So
really?
Now's the time to make that call, because we're kind of in the late innings here.
We're in the late innings, and we need your support for sure.
1-866-247-9576, or you can also do it the easy way, WLRNradio.org. Well, we have chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gastenheimer and Fred Tasker with us. Linda, we're all growing a bit older. Well, not you or Bonnie, of course, but Fred and I may get some help from today's guest. Fred and I are getting older.
That's for sure.
You're just getting more beautiful, each of you.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yes.
He won something, right?
Is that
right.
Too saccharine?
Okay, no, listen. Hello, Joe and Bonnie. Alzheimer's, dementia. More than 5 million people have these diseases. And a question many have is, can we protect ourselves from these feared diseases? And our guest, Dr. Neil Barnard, you just heard him, he says yes. His book is Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Well, welcome, Dr. Barnard.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Well, thank you. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Also, do you have any questions for our guests? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And email, Bonnie?
Email's open, radio@WLRN.org.
It might be easier to email today because we're getting the pledge calls in.
Yeah, we don't have any confusion there.
Right. Also, our favorite wine guy is with us, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine column in today's Miami Herald. Fred, what's in your glass today?
Well, Passover is coming up on Monday, so I thought I'd talk about kosher wines.
What's in your driveway, Fred, also? Is it snowing?
A good foot of snow, and it's still snowing. It's beautiful here. I imagine you guys are jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, right. Dr. Barnard, Power Foods is a fascinating book. The question is, can we really prevent Alzheimer's by changing our diets? What's the story?
I believe we can. As a matter of fact, I believe that we could probably prevent as many as perhaps 70 to 80% of cases of Alzheimer's disease, and I think people could also have greater mental clarity earlier in life. By that, I mean that if you're sort of losing your car keys a little bit too frequently and you feel like you're not as sharp as you were when you were younger, I think that much of that relates to diet and lifestyle. The research is relatively new, but it has matured to the point that it's time to put it to work. Just like a generation ago, we got our handle on heart disease. We knew it was not caused by old age. It was caused by smoking, obesity, diet habits, things we can control. I think the same is true with brain health, and now is the time for us to put that to work if we possibly.
Well, what kind of data is behind that research?
Well, a number of very, very good studies weighed in. In my mind, the classic one was started in Chicago, 1993. It's called the Chicago Health and Aging Project. Researchers from Rush University set out and they interviewed thousands and thousands of older Chicago residents, or maybe I should say middle-aged and older. And then they just kept the data on what they had been eating, and they tracked over the years the health of this group. And it became abundantly clear by about 2003 that those people who tended to avoid, the way I put it is, avoid everything that I had been eating as a child, the ones who were not eating the high saturated fat foods, the people who were not eating lots of bacon and cheese and that kind of thing, that they're...
You've got a very sad face here in the studio. Joe has a very sad face, but please continue. He needs to hear this.
Saturated fat is the fat that's in bacon grease. So when I was a kid growing up in North Dakota, my mother would fry up the bacon in the pan and then save the grease that was left over so that she could fry eggs in it and that kind of thing.
Well, of course.
That saturated fat in the Chicago study was linked to a dramatic increase in Alzheimer's risk. And conversely, those people who tend to not eat that had probably two-thirds less risk of other people. Also, the trans fats. These are the partially hydrogenated oils in donuts and other snack foods. If you avoided those, your risk of Alzheimer's was cut by 80% or more. At the same time, certain parts of the diet are protective. vitamin E-rich foods and others that hopefully we'll talk about, and you put it all together and you crunch the numbers, it's hard for me to escape the conclusion that 70 to 80% or even more of Alzheimer's cases would either never occur or never occur until the absolute end of life if we put this to use. It's new data, but it's time for us to use it.
Well, what about genetics? I mean, research has shown that there is a genetic link to some types of dementia. Is it inevitable? Or can diet overcome this genetic predisposition to dementia?
There is a strong genetic link, but genes are not destiny. And here's what I mean. There is a gene for Alzheimer's disease called APOE epsilon 4. This will not be on the test, but doctors can measure it. And if you get it from your mother, you have probably three times the risk of Alzheimer's compared to somebody else, if you got it from one parent. If you got it from both parents, your risk of Alzheimer's is boosted by 10 to 15%. So when that became clear, then people first concluded it's hopeless. It's just genetic. There's nothing you can do. But then we discovered what the gene is doing. The gene is not doing anything decisive. What it does is it makes a protein that carries cholesterol from place to place. And so if you're not eating these bad fats that stimulate the production of cholesterol in your body, that gene is left sort of high and dry, if I can put it that way. You've still got the gene, but it's not doing anything, so to speak.
Well, what you talk about cholesterol. So many people are taking statin drugs to reduce their cholesterol. So can they just take the statin drugs and eat their bacon?
That's exactly what a whole lot of people are doing. And I have to say, I think it's a complete mistake. And if I could go into every cardiology office in America and say, wait on your prescription, take away not just the bacon, but what I'll do, if a person says, I've got a cholesterol problem, what should I do? What I say to them is, give me 8 weeks, 2 months. I want you to throw out all of the animal products, not just the bacon, but even the chicken, because the chicken has saturated fat, much more than you'd imagine, that tends to drive up your cholesterol. And the only way you can find out if your cholesterol is a genetic problem is to get animal products out of your diet, keep oils low, then test after about 2 months. If your cholesterol has not budged, then that is a genetic thing. And at that point, statins may be the issue, but 90% of people on statins are treating a diet-related problem. But to get back to your point, there was a fascinating study done by Kaiser Permanente. They tracked cholesterol levels, and they showed they were tightly linked to Alzheimer's risk. The higher the cholesterol, the higher the risk. But here was the thing. The cholesterol tests they measured were done 30 years before diagnosis, when people were around 40. And then they looked at people who were in their 70s and 80s to see if they got Alzheimer's disease. In other words, what you're eating now determines your risk later. So why do we have an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease today? It's because of the advent of fast food escorting cheese and meat and, right, frankly, the worst diet that America has ever had into our lives about a generation ago. And now we are paying the price for it.
Going to go to break in about a half a minute, but Bonnie, did you have a quick question?
I had a question about when you said that if somebody has the gene and the gene, would you explain that again? If you have the gene,
what I mean
and
is
that it's not activated,
or for yes, both parents,
the gene creates a protein whose job it is to escort cholesterol in the body, including in the brain. And what I am suggesting is that if we eat in such a way that our bodies do not overproduce that cholesterol, then that protein made by the gene has nothing to do.
Right.
So you're effectively turning the gene off. And that's true for many disease-related genes, including diabetes and weight problems.
Okay. Well, this is really fascinating. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is Dr. Neil Barnard. He's telling us about the power, how food can power our brains. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Dr. Neil Barnard. His book is Power Foods for the Brain, an effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. And he's been telling us how we can protect ourselves from Alzheimer's and related dementia. Dr. Barnard, before the break, you mentioned that foods that we were eating when people were 30 and 40 years old would affect us later on. So is it too late for those of us who are past 40?
Yes. If we're in our 60s, does it make any difference now?
Oh, that's a terrific question. The answer seems to be very much like heart disease, where the sooner you start, the better off you're going to be. If a person follows a healthy diet, say in high school, the ability to keep the arteries clean lifelong seems to be quite clear. However, even late in life, dietary changes can have an absolutely decisive effect, as we saw with heart disease. Older folks who follow a vegetarian diet and start exercising and throw away the cigarettes, their arteries open up again. And we have seen some of this with people who are starting to get memory problems, maybe in their late 70s. It's an interesting study out of the University of Cincinnati, where they brought in a group of people, average age 78, and what they asked them to do, oddly enough, was to take advantage of certain nutritional properties in fruits. Blueberries and grapes have what are called anthocyanins that give them that purple color, and they also are powerful antioxidants. And it turned out that 2 cups of grape juice over about a 12-week period noticeably improved their memory and improved their recall. That was true both for grapes and for blueberries.
Did they have the grape juice and give up their meat? Or just the grape juice?
In this case, it was only the grape juice intervention. Now, but there have been
other... could be a run on grape juice now.
How about wine intervention? Does that do any good?
Well,
there we go.
That's what inspired the study, is that researchers have been looking at wine, and it's pretty clear that people who have a glass of wine every day have about half the risk of Alzheimer's compared to people who are either teetotalers or heavier drinkers. But alcohol every day increases the risk of breast cancer, about 10% per drink that you have on a daily basis. So people haven't wanted to advocate for daily alcohol consumption because it's a double-edged sword. So they decided maybe it isn't the alcohol anyway. It could be the grape. It could be the pigments in the grape, and that does seem to be the case. But back on the fats, as we were talking about earlier, there have been some large studies showing that even among older folks, cutting back on these bad fats, going toward more plant-based foods, is a major payoff. So my bottom line, whatever age you are, the more your diet is drawn from plants, the less from animal products and fats, the better off you're going to be.
Well, is this so different from what we've been told for heart disease and for diabetes? Are all of these sort of theories coming together now?
They are coalescing to a very strong degree, including some of the fine points. When you look into the brain of a person with Alzheimer's, you see these little microscopic specks, these little plaques that look like meatballs almost, very, very tiny meatballs or balls of yarn.
That's kind of an apt description.
Well, they're called amyloid plaques. Yes. And in them is also not just some cholesterol and protein, but there is also traces of metals, iron and copper and aluminum. And this also fits with heart disease because we learned a long time ago that people who get too much iron in their diet are at a higher risk of heart disease. So... what's good for your heart is good for the brain, but we do go a couple of steps further. We try to avoid these metals like aluminum, which isn't such an issue for heart disease and is still controversial for Alzheimer's, but I am convinced it's good to take steps away.
Where do we get metals in our diet?
Well, the obvious one is cookware. So if you're scraping your stew in a cast iron pan or an aluminum pan, traces of the metals get into your body. If you're drinking an antacid, some antacids have aluminum in them, others don't. And it's easy to make these choices, but most people don't think to look. And the aluminum does get to the brain. It is a neurotoxin. Having said that, some neurologists feel that it's not relevant, that it's not an issue. My assessment of the literature is that it's too risky to expose yourself to aluminum and that it's the most cautious thing is to avoid it.
Dr. Bernard, what about fish? You always hear that's so good for the brain.
Yeah. Well, people have made that case. And there are studies showing that people who switch from red meat to fish are getting themselves in a somewhat better position. And there are good fats in fish, the omega-3. However, I personally think we can do a whole lot better than fish because fish does have some good fat, the omega-3. That's only about 15% to 30% of it, and all the rest is a mixture of bad fat or unnecessary fat. So, no, I don't think fish is nothing like vegetables and fruits and whole grains and beans in my book.
You know, it's so hard for people to just become, you're advocating really becoming a vegan because you're cutting out cheese, I guess, and eggs as well.
Yes, I am advocating throwing out the animal products completely, and my grandpa is rolling in his grave when I say it, because my dear grandfather raised cattle, as did his parents and their parents. In fact, the whole Barnard family tree is full of people who created the foods that I now am condemning. But that's because they didn't know better. And unfortunately, both my grandparents on that side of the family and their son, my dad, developed severe dementia. And I think if we had known the links between animal fat and the brain-damaging disease, I think they all would have raised asparagus instead of beef.
Let me ask you, for some people this might be too extreme, especially vegan or just 100% vegetarian. If people cut back and maybe have fish or chicken or something a few times a week and vegetables the rest of the time, can that help?
The more you do, the better it is. And if you get some fish and you decide to feed it to your cat instead of eating it yourself, your cat will be very happy and your brain will be protected. But lest anyone think that this is a diet of privation, what if you and I went to the nicest Italian restaurant in town and they offer you a glass of red wine, which you gratefully accept, then they bring a salad and a bowl of lentil soup or minestrone or pasta fagioli, then they bring you your angel hair pasta, and they say, what would you like on top? And you say, top it with the artichoke hearts and the wild mushrooms and the chunky tomatoes and a little piquant sauce, and then could I have an espresso afterward? And you finish your lovely meal. You don't think of it as you don't think of it this way, but everything you ate happened to be free of animal products.
Could I have olive oil on that pasta?
You can, but I wouldn't go too crazy with the olive oil. It beats the socks off animal fat, but you'll discover that there are non-oil cooking techniques that I use when people are trying to slim their waistline, because getting away from fats has a real payoff.
So you want no fat at all. No oils, no canola oil, no olive oil.
I don't think you have to blot your noodles when they come over when the waiter sets them down on your plate. I don't personally go quite that far, but I do teach all of our patients non-oil cooking techniques. When I fire up my stainless steel pan, I used to think that you had to replace oil with vegetable broth or something. You can do that, or you can saute in wine, but you can also saute them in a dry pan. It's a little bit lighter taste, but it works out fine. So if you've got some of these tricks up your sleeve...
What are you going to put on your pasta?
Sounds pretty boring to me.
Well, you can put tomato sauce, right?
Right. And then?
Okay, two things should be said. Okay. As I mentioned, artichoke hearts, mushrooms in a spicy tomato sauce. They call it an arrabbiata sauce, or sometimes they call it a marinara sauce, chunky tomatoes. But I also want to say that there is nothing more boring, or that's the wrong word, upsetting or devastating, than seeing your wife or your husband or your mother or your father forget who you are. And you visit them in the home, and they need to be in special underwear because they are incontinent. And they don't die. They're still alive. And they're going to stay alive for the next 10 years, not knowing anybody. That's what we're talking about. And we've decided just to live with it, because that's part of old age. My message as a physician is this is a disease process that is caused by things we have identified. And my message now is to get out from in front of the bus that is attacking us.
All right.
I know that's a hard message for people to hear, but that's reality. It's critical. And that's why, by the way, I'm also grateful to this station for raising these controversies and these issues. And you've made a call for support, and I echo that call, because it's so important for us to talk about these things, disagree about them, ask questions about them, and have fun getting onto a healthier path.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
Okay, thank you. Doctor, we're going to take another short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Dr. Neil Barnard. His book is Power Foods for the Brain. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more.
And we return. It's today's Topical Currents, Food and Dining Edition. Of course, every Thursday, Fred Tasker, along with, of course, producer, syndicated columnist Linda Gassenheimer. And I'm joined by Bonnie Berman. Bonnie, before we continue with our interview with the doctor, this is sort of the last time when people can pledge during Topical Currents and support the regional and local programming. So we want to re-emphasize
yes.
that now is the time to act.
Yes, now
if
is the time to act.
Sitting on the fence, it's time to get off that fence.
Right, and we still have hovering around $300,000 to raise before 7 o'clock tomorrow night. But you are listening to Topical Currents now, and we really appreciate your support. We're not here tomorrow. It's South Florida Arts Beat with Ed Bell. So
this is it.
This is it for you to
and
show
support,
your support.
This
support
is
our
it.
Food and dining section.
Of course.
Yes, Linda, of
please
course.
Please do. Well, we've been talking with Dr. Neil Barnard. His book is Power Foods for the Brain, an Effective Three-Step Plan to Protect Your Mind and Strengthen Your Memory. And he's been telling us how we can protect ourselves from Alzheimer's and related dementia. Before we learn more about that, I want Dr. Barnard to know that we do Dinner in Minutes each week, and my Dinner in Minutes is a vegetarian one today.
Oh,
finally.
Did you plan that, Linda?
I sure did.
Oh, good for you.
Red pesto pasta with walnut and chickpea salad. So fresh basil and tomatoes blend to make a tasty variation for pesto sauce instead of using the usual basil and parsley. And the pesto retains its vibrant flavors because it's not cooked. So you put your red peppers in your food processor and your basil in your food processor, and you let it combine. And then I put some garlic, some tomato paste, and then I do, doctor, put some oil, a little bit of oil.
No pine nuts?
Process it. No, I process it first. And then afterwards,
the
I add the pine nuts and a little cayenne pepper. And what happens is you drain your spaghetti, and the heat from the spaghetti cooks the sauce. So it's very simple, very vibrant. just having a little trouble getting it out today.
It's too bad the doctor can't get a taste of this. It's delicious.
We're eating as
piping
we're talking.
Hot.
That's why I'm hesitating. I'm sorry. Mix. Then you can mix a low-fat dressing with some walnuts and some chickpeas and put it on some lettuce, and that's your Dinner in Minutes. You can see that full recipe and a photo at dinnerinminutes.com. And follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. While we finish eating here, Joe and Bonnie.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, we're drooling here. Mm-hmm. Fred Tasker, what are we drinking?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Passover begins on Monday, and of course, wine, usually kosher wine, plays an important role in the traditional Seder ceremonies. And the good news is, as most people know by now, I suppose, is it doesn't have to be sweet wines. In fact,
no
the Herzog family, which is now a major California kosher winery, has a history of making dry kosher wines back in Czechoslovakia in the 1800s. They didn't make that many sweet wines there. Sweet kosher wines became popular in America only in the early 1900s when thousands of Jews who were fleeing the pogroms in Europe came to New York City. And it turned out that the closest grape, which came from upstate New York, was the Concord grape, which is so tart and high in acid that you basically can't drink it unless you make it sweet. But these days, they're making kosher wines all over the place, and there are plenty of excellent dry ones. In fact, some American Jewish families will use the traditional square bottle sweet kosher wines for the four ceremonial toasts during the Seder. But for that great Seder meal, they can now turn to fine kosher wines that are dry. With the gefilte fish or the matzo ball soup, for example, they might try a trendy new kosher Prosecco Italian sparkling wine. The Bartonura company makes one for $19. And with the savory slow-cooked beef brisket, they could serve a hearty dry red petite Syrah from the Carmel winery in the Judean hills of Israel for $30. And if the meal ends with a traditional extra sweet dried fruit compote with prunes and apricots and sugar and all that, they could serve as a dessert wine, a sweet sparkling Moscato, also by Bartonura, for $18. And later in the evening, the family elders might even relax with a snifter of kosher for Passover cognac, VSOP cognac, from the French firm Louis Royer. You might have just a little, though, because this is $65 a bottle. So, in other words, however you do your Seder, the world's kosher wineries have you covered.
Well, thank you. That's great advice, Fred. Let's go back to Dr. Bernard. We've mentioned cutting back on fats and eating mostly plant foods, and also trying to be careful of aluminum and copper or iron in our diets. We haven't talked about caffeine. What about coffee?
You know, coffee is a really interesting thing. There have been a number of studies, probably the best ones were done in Finland. And like everywhere else on the planet, there are some big coffee enthusiasts there and other people who avoid it. It turned out that coffee drinkers had substantially less risk of Alzheimer's compared to other people. Here was the caveat, though. You had to drink a lot of it, like 3, 4, or 5 cups a day. And over the years, for some reason, these people had less risk of Alzheimer's. We don't know if it's the caffeine or if it is some other part of the coffee bean. It's sort of like grapes, that there are antioxidants in coffee beans, too. Now, the downside of caffeine, of course, is if it goofs up your sleep, then that will affect your short-term memory. So that's about as far as we know we can go on coffee.
So you don't know whether decaffeinated coffee would help?
Not yet, no. There was just not enough of it consumed by the people in these studies. Of course, decaf does help sleep to a degree, although not quite as effective in helping people sleep as having a bottle of water instead of the coffee.
All right, so let's talk about your favorite brain boosters. I mean, Bonnie mentioned that she thought fish was supposed to help your brain. What kind of food should we have to help us?
Well, I mentioned earlier the Chicago study where they tracked people to see what was harming them. They also looked to see what was helping them. And number one on the list was foods that are rich in vitamin E. So that might be walnuts that you might crumble up and put on your morning oatmeal or on your pancakes or maybe on a salad. Walnuts, pecans, almonds, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, they all have vitamin E that, if you get enough of it, can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's by anywhere between 25% and 70%.
That's a huge range. Huh?
Yeah, it's a huge range, but it's all significant. And it's one way to think about it is maybe one handful of walnuts on your oatmeal, 25%, 2 handfuls, 50%.
Well, let me ask you a question. Since I'm worried about this not having any sauce on my pasta and everything, what about walnut oil?
I guess in theory it should work because the active component seems to be vitamin E. It is fat soluble, so it does go into the oil. Keep in mind that the walnut itself, though, has nutrients that are not in the oil. The fiber and so forth is left in the nuts. A couple other things, though. Green leafy vegetables bring you folate. That's a B vitamin. It gets its name from foliage. So green leafy vegetables like kale and collards that have foliage bring you folate. B6 is in bananas and in beans. And the folate and B6 work together to help protect the brain, and they can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's as well. They do that by getting rid of a compound that otherwise builds up in the brain as a sort of a factory waste, if you will. The folate and B6 help eliminate that and allow the brain to recover from it.
So let me ask you then, if we're going to go on to the strict diet, do you ever have a blowout weekend yourself? Have a little something delicious?
Well, big old steak?
What happens is, at first you'll think, gee, do I want to go vegan? You know, I don't know. I know it's good. I know it's better for my health. I know it's better for my heart, my brain. It's better for animals. It's better for the environment. It's better in every way. But will I miss these foods? And you have the same conversation with yourself that you have about smoking, which is, do I want to quit? Oh, I don't know. Is life worth living without a cigarette? But then what you discover is, after a few moments of doubt, then you get onto this better path. And earlier I mentioned an Italian meal. You can have terrific meals at Sichuan restaurants, Hunan restaurants, Ethiopian restaurants, Mexican restaurants, Japanese. Last night I ate at a Japanese restaurant where they brought me miso soup, wonderful salads. I had a cucumber sushi roll and a sweet potato sushi roll, and it was just delicious. And then if somebody said to me, ah, come on, Neil, don't you want a pork chop? I want that about as much as I want a cigarette, which is to say, I'm past that. I've broken free. And you're not going to lure me back into something that's going to hurt.
Okay. All right. Well, this has been very, very fascinating and interesting. But Dr. Neil Bernard, we're just out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. And I hope people will take a look at Power Foods for the Brain. I want them to try the recipes, not just for themselves, but for the people that they love. Okay. I think that we could stop this epidemic.
Right. Power foods for the brain.
Thank
and effective three-step plan to protect your mind and strengthen your memory. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
And Joseph and Bonnie, you ate well today.
Yes, we certainly
Thank
did.
You, Linda.
And ate healthy today. Next week, we'll be talking about winning wines and the foods to go with them with Shari Gurman and Chef Christina McCammer.
We're going to take a short break and we'll come back and close.
Yes, I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me next week.
And that wraps up today's edition. We hope you'll support regional and local programming with a pledge. 1-866-247-9576. Also, WLRNradio.org. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical direction from Caroline Brader Watts. Paul Leary is online producer. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with Phoebe Baker Hyde, author of The Beauty Experiment. She gave up makeup, creams, scrubs, and moisturizers and examined her ideas about looking good. To the calendar, on this day in 1747, 266 years ago, during a violent storm at sea, 22-year-old slave ship captain John Newton dramatically becomes a Christian. He abandons the slave trade, becomes a minister, and composes the classic Amazing Grace. And on this day in 1939, 74 years ago, 31-year-old Kate Smith records Irving Berlin's God Bless America, which becomes a sort of second national anthem during World War II. Of course, Woody Guthrie wrote, "This land is our land," to protest its unquestioning allegiance. One more while we recall Bloody Sunday and the Jefferson Davis Highway. On this day in 1965, 48 years ago, 3,000 demonstrators led by Martin Luther King begin a five-day freedom march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. Please make that pledge call. We leave with a thought from Kate Smith, who at one point did a national broadcast six nights a week. Quote from Kate Smith, "I know I'm fat, I know my hair is straight, but I can sing." Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Talk of the Nation up next.